Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Another Monday, Cofield and Company. Ellis Island, the front yard is the site. Funny, I had someone ask me yesterday, I was hanging out, and someone's like, hey, do you do any warm-ups before the show with your voice? I'm like, not really. I was just talking to a former employee who I think has been gone for at least 10 years. Last time I saw him, Willie Ramirez is the company today.
Yep.
Last time I saw him was in El Paso last year, and he's like, you look like the sports pig now. How much weight have you gained? I'm like, good to see you.
Wow.
But I think he's getting hard of hearing.
Oh.
So I was just screaming to warm up my voice. And then there's Willie Griffin, who's back in our Findlay Toyota Studios. There's Willie, who now warms up every day by talking to his vast audience on TikTok. What is going on in your TikTok show?
It's not really a TikTok show, but I have my live chat going. I have followers in joining me here on TikTok. Like right now, Rosie just jumped in. Kilroy just jumped in. They're jumping in for the show. They're tuned in. You don't really need to warm up because you already talk loud. You never know when you're going to raise your voice. You kind of go up and down your enunciation, your pronunciation. I mean, you're all over the place.
So
in reality, you never know when you're going to go off, down, bip, bip, bip. So, yeah, it is.
I might talk off mic.
You might lean back and talk and then forget, oh, man, I'm talking to the mic.
I rarely do that.
You never know what you're going to get, but here's the thing.
Fired up. Good. No, here's the thing. Go ahead.
You make business decisions, and so we're going to have to make business decisions during the show.
Got to stand on that.
Yep.
Every time I come down to Ellis Island on Mondays,
yes,
I see the progress that has been made.
Yes,
with relation to F1,
oh,
it is pretty crazy how much they get done each week.
Mm. It's,
and they're doing a build out here, like a 4-story build out. I was told it was going to be 3, but that looks like 4 or maybe 5.
Oh, up there, yeah.
Yeah.
And 1 year ago, we had it was a flyover.
No, the bridge is coming.
Oh, it's coming back.
It's a temporary bridge.
It comes back.
And I'll tell you what, after F1 was here, what a lovely ride that was. I'm serious. It was great.
Yeah, when is that?
F1?
Yeah.
Say 2.5 weeks into November. So we still got a little ways.
I didn't even think about that when I agreed to do Monday shows.
Well, I don't think you agreed to do every week. I mean, you can bow out if you want.
Okay.
We got a lot of bench now. A lot of bench.
We do. We have a big roster. And you know what I'm excited about this week's roster? I don't know about the rest of them, but my Seattle Seahawks came in.
Yeah, we had a good, really good day in Circa Millions. So we'll get to that.
We will.
Really good day.
But I felt
I don't know how we're doing it. I felt really good for you.
I was about to get relegated out.
You
brought it up on the show last week. Not my show, but I was listening. You were talking to Adam. Adam crapped on my play. And
oh, did he?
Well, sure. He said, I understand why he's doing it, but I don't like it.
Okay.
So, but.
Griffin, mark that down. We need to pull that for tomorrow.
He and I talked about it yesterday in the Raiders press box. He acknowledges it. You know Adam doesn't hide from none of that. But you said Willie's currently number 5. He could get pushed out, something to that effect. So. You were pushing that narrative. I feel as if you were hoping for it.
No, I was not hoping for it. Why would I hope for that?
See how the tone of voice is up and down? We got the new kid here, so pay attention, because this up and down with the voice here.
Why would I root for that? I want to go 5-0.
That's true.
I don't want anyone to lose.
Yeah.
But if you do, you're out. And then you can work your way back in.
All right.
I actually had a winner, too, yesterday. So
who'd you have? So you're 3-0?
Right side winner, I'm going to say. Had it all the way. Rams.
Never in doubt.
+7.
Never in doubt.
They were in the game. That wasn't a blowout game.
No.
So, fun day yesterday.
Yeah.
From what I heard, and we'll check into this a little more later on the show, the books smashed everyone again.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yep.
Well,
the upsets.
When you look out this window over here, those big buildings, the shiny ones, they got that way because they win, not because they lose.
So, when I first came to town, I'm going to counter that. When I first came to town, I wound up going downtown, had a good time, wound up settling in, believe it or not, at Bourbon Street, which was right here.
Yes.
Remember Bourbon Street? Coldest room I've ever been in. It was such, because, you know, your first time here, you're like, It was August. No, it was actually June. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what the? It's like 110. You know, drove cross country. I get in that room. I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. It's like a chiller in here. So to counter your point, that one's gone. So did they lose at sports betting? No. Did we beat them?
No. There's only one place in town that I know that's ever been closed because of a sports betting. Do you know what that is?
One of the old books. Hold on. Churchill Downs.
No.
No? What was it?
It was a place down on Sunset Road just before Boulder Highway called Tom's Sunset Casino. The next time, and you know who?
I remember what happened.
Perry Swanson was there. Okay. I think Jeff Sherman. Ask them. They know the history of it.
Independent book?
It was a casino. It was like a little neighborhood joint.
Yeah, I remember.
And it had a sports book. I can't remember if it was a Cal Neva or a Leroy's or if it was independent. But if I'm not mistaken, they got taken down hard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The book did them in?
I think it was sports. Jeff will know the whole story.
Okay.
Next time you see Jeff.
All right. Well, as we do on Mondays often, just trying to stay away from the obvious news. We'll get to the Raiders here inside of 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Throughout the show, going to be checking the phone, the computer, the sources. Kidding about the sources part. Chaos today with the conferences. Conference realignment. We went into the weekend,
wild,
and we heard about the rumors with the six-pack and the AAC and Tulane and Memphis, maybe South Florida, UTSA, that the six-pack was hot and heavy. Then rumors that the AAC, now led by a guy named Tim Pernetti, who went to a very fine academic institution on the East Coast. He was going to push back.
Yeah.
Very fine academic institution on the East Coast.
Attaboy.
And then we thought it was all but a certainty that Air Force was bailing, following on the heels of San Diego State, Fresno State, Colorado State, and Boise State. But everything's changed today. AAC got all four of those schools I mentioned to commit. And apparently the Mountain West came up with a plan where they're trying to incentivize schools to stay around, apparently using the money that the Pac-12 and the four schools that are leaving will have to pay to the Mountain West. So I don't think it came down in the last 10 minutes, but apparently they're awaiting a decision from UNLV.
I don't think that it's safe for the existing conferences, like the conferences that have the institutions. I don't think it's safe, if it's true, that they're giving them an ultimatum and putting them on the spot and saying, you have a deadline. I mean, at this point, it's probably not a good idea. Even though they don't have, the schools don't have an offer on the table, you know what I mean? It shows you how scared they are, though, if it's true.
If we had all the details and if it's completely true,
yeah,
then we can make a call on it, but we're working on it. It's kind of weird, though. You go from the middle of last week where Rebel fans were all down in the dumps and were like, we're screwed. Screw the Pac-12. We hate them. To now, it feels like UNLV is because of the AAC, the four schools' decision to stay around,
yeah,
that UNLV has a little muscle it can flex here.
You know, I was thinking of something when you sent the rundown over. You put the six-pack. Because you always like, you're like notorious for that. You always like to play off words, play off little.
Right.
Did the current Pac-2 miss its chance, its opportunity, especially when they held that little impromptu deal at the Bellagio? Did they miss their chance to throw the two in front of Pac and play off of Tupac? Tupac?
Explain further.
It's not the Pac-12. It's the Pac-2 right now.
Would you go with the Pac-2 over the Tupac?
It would be Tupac. I was just going off of the way they spell it. It struck a chord while I was sitting at a red light reading the rundown. I saw you did six-pack.
Did you think of that because of the six-pack?
Yes.
The Pac-2, or because we're right on the corner of Flamingo and Cobalt?
I didn't think of it because of Flamingo and Cobalt, but that's a good point.
Which, by the way, on that story about Bourbon Street, coming in, going in the room, all air-conditioned, how that place is gone. I was over this way, and I always love the point of the front yard, like people can see me. They actually can. We're running video.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I was over at the MGM that night.
Oh, yeah.
As Al Hall broke loose, and eventually the two cars met up on this corner.
Do you know at the top of Koval, when you get to Harmon, on the northwest corner, that lot, that that area, which is now is somewhat developed here and there. But for the longest time, do you know what that there's somebody who you absolutely love this old school Vegas character when me and the late Dave Kokin would talk about, but do you know what that corner was notorious for? Was very famous for back in the day, late 70s, early 80s?
I do tell.
So caddy corner for that is the Marie Antoinette high rise.
Still there.
Right, it's still there.
I have a friend. By the way, I have a friend who lives over there, and he said the F1 build out here, the construction, is dynamite. He said it starts at 6 a.m. with the jackhammers.
Loves it.
Every day.
Okay.
So Marie Antoinette, and then what was across the way?
Gianni Russo lived in that building, and he bought two, so he had two condos, and they went corner to corner, so his balcony wrapped around, and it overlooked that lot. He was going to put a pirate ship, and he was going to, or something like that. He was going to build a casino there.
Did he have that much money? Oh, wait, hold on. He had access to money.
He had access to money.
Sorry about that. I forgot with Gianni Russo. He had access to money. Or was he going to take some Dionne Warwick money and invest?
Could have been. She could have been an investor because it was in that time frame.
Was the second apartment for her?
No. He busted out walls.
Oh, really?
So he had this huge corner, property inside of the up high. One was a steam room. It was fantastic.
So great. By the way, just checking on those updates.
Yeah.
Ross Dellinger has been really good on this, college football dude. Yahoo says Pac-12 is mobilizing to target Mountain West members in a race against the Mountain West efforts to secure schools with financial incentives. Utah State, UNLV, Nevada, San Jose State, as of 5:30 Eastern time, so that was about 40 minutes ago, have not signed. Air Force to get $10 million plus bonus.
Will we get that information? But when is it? When are you saying these?
I don't know when the deadline is.
Oh.
I'm going to try to find out.
I'm
going to try to find out if that's true.
Well, put a call in.
I will. Well, I can't do it while I'm on the air.
I wish I could. Yeah.
You got to do the show. Well, you're doing two shows right now. How are you going to make a call? You're doing a TikTok show?
I got TikTok on. I got ESPN on. I could try to reach out to Teresa Gould. I don't know if she would answer, but.
So it's crazy times right now. And you know why it's crazy today? If there really is a deadline, we spent all this time, right? And these are big, big moments where you got to make a decision. They're like, let's go. Come on. But I also understand why both of the conferences are like, ah! Like, we need some. We need a decision. It's a very interesting time.
But
on the way back,
yeah.
Raiders, that was terrible yesterday. And I had multiple conversations with people who were like, what? How much are the Raiders going to win by? Just win. Just avoid the all too typical letdown or disaster by this Las Vegas squad. I mean, come on. Today's Mega Monday, so you get the big giant schooner. You buy one, you get one.
Good.
We've also got great giveaways, including UNLV football tickets, which are very hard to come by right now, against Fresno State coming up on Saturday. A bunch of other cool prizes, and right now until 6 is happy hour Monday to Friday, but on a Monday it's important because we got two Monday night football games tonight. Kickoff for the first one, the Bills and the Jags, is 4:30. They've got $7 bites and $7 drinks. Come on down, hang for Monday Night Football with Cofield and Company, Ellis Island, the front yard.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island.
I think there was definitely some individuals that made business decisions and will make business decisions going forward as well.
On ESPN, Las Vegas.
I like the emotion in general of Antonio Pierce. And I probably shouldn't comment until I hear the entire bite, which let's effort that. I'd like to hear all of it before I comment, but that's not – and I'm not an NFL head coach. That's not something I would say. And that was today, right? That was today.
That was yesterday.
Was yesterday? Okay, it was yesterday.
That was an answer to a question about just the personnel and how it looked disappointed. And he said that's pretty much the – there's nothing been taken out of context. But he addressed it in full because it was – I mean – everybody asked a different angle today.
Hey,
at the
what can I get you?
Well, no,
all right.
I'm fine. Everybody was asking from different angles about that answer yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you said this, so did it mean this? You said this, does it mean coaches? You said this, does he was like, I haven't had a chance to sit down with them. I haven't when I know and when we know, you'll know. Until then, it's not really a topic that he's going to bring up with the media before he's going to discuss with his coaching staff and his players.
I mean, as you're watching that game, Were you befuddled? What was the crowd reaction? Is all of a sudden Carolina Panthers with Andy Dalton are like freaking top half of the league offense are clicking all over the place. Weapons that have shown in the past to be pretty good players. Chuba Hubbard, Deontay Johnson, all of a sudden it's like a new team.
Right. And it's, I mean, I don't know whether it's, we're not going to know whether or not it's the Panthers all of a sudden because of the infusion of Andy Dalton or if the Raiders are raidering. And the let's be real. The Raiders did not look good against the Chargers. They did not look good in the first half against the Ravens. They did not look good in four quarters against the Panthers. So out of 12 quarters, they've looked good in two. That's 1/6 of this season so far. 1/6.
Here's a reborn Deontay Johnson in the second quarter.
Dalton claps his hands. Play clock down to one. He gets it off. Back to throw. Pressure off the edge. He lobs to the back corner of the end zone. And it's caught. Touchdown, Deontay Johnson. Just got enough space beyond Jack Jones.
Here's Adam Thielen from the Fountain of Youth.
Three-step drop. He's hopping in the backfield. Takes a shot towards the end zone for Thielen. Reaches the hands up. Brings it in at the goal line. Touchdown, Carolina. Adam Thielen made the grab. He's grabbing his right leg. He's injured in the end zone, but he caught it first for a Carolina touchdown here late in the second quarter.
I thought that one was really important. One, the throw by Andy Dalton. I don't want to get out of control and say I don't think that's a throw that Bryce Young can make right now, but I don't think that's a throw that Bryce Young can make right now. But it was when it happened and how stunning it was. Momentum does matter sometimes, and that was, I mean, at that point, it's what, 22-7? It's not a 21-7. It's not a freaking backbreaker, but that had to feel like crap going to the locker room.
Well, yeah, especially this organization. I looked up a stat during that game. When the Raiders are down by 14 or more at halftime, this is according to Stathead. I punched in, I checked the filters, made sure I had everything punched in right. When they're down by 14 or more at halftime, that was their 59th straight loss. I mean, you could say, well, those are different coaches. This is a different time now. Okay, but a pattern is a pattern. And it just becomes contagious from one regime to the next, from one roster to the next. So it did seem like everything that Carolina was doing, even on, you know, even if they went three and out, which wasn't often, you know, all nine of their plays that went for 15 or more yards through the air. Andy Dalton, you mentioned the throw. That's a veteran throw. You know, you're not going to see too many rookies make that. You're going to have to be pretty standout or just have to throw one on a dime. But he was landing passes that obviously Bryce Young hasn't been able to do. So, and he sparked that team. And they just never took the foot off the gas pedal. And we saw what happened. And the Raiders couldn't recover. You know, and you could talk about Max Crosby's ankle sprain. You could talk about injuries here and there, but they're not going to use excuses. That's what you go to OTAs and training camp for, is to have depth and to be better. So I'll be interested to see what Antonio Pierce is talking about when he says play, you know, business decisions and who he's got, because reality, the interpretation that everybody's taking from it, the national media, the local media, whoever, is that the team gave up on him. The players gave up on him. They were deflated. Well, I'm sorry, if that's right, that starts at the top. That's toxicity. If that's the case, or you have a quitter's mentality, I mean, there are teams where let me put it to you this way. When the team showed resilience last year under Antonio Pierce, wasn't giving up, they won their first two games, the Giants were like, well, that's what Antonio Pierce brings, that rah-rah mentality. Okay, well, then if they're deflated and they have a loser's mentality, that's got to start at the top also.
But they were deflated. They were likely deflated going into the half against the Ravens.
Right.
And they bounced back and played a great final quarter. I don't want to hear that. They bailed?
Well,
I understand. He's the one who said business decisions.
And so. I said interpretation from right. The media was that that's what he was implying. I don't know if we don't know if that's true. What I said was the immediate interpretation from the national media and some local media members was that what he was trying to say in that was that they gave up on him. Now, we don't know if that's what he meant. Maybe there was a rift. Maybe there was dissension. Maybe there were some F-bombs thrown at one another. We just didn't see it. We don't know.
And then second half, they just couldn't sustain anything until it was too late. They're down 36-7, and then they start moving the ball, and then Akon comes in and, you know, quick passes. I did like what I saw from him. He got the ball out quickly. Jacoby Myers piled up some number. I mean, there's some positives. There's something to build on. We'll get into whether they should make a quarterback switch anytime soon, but the end of the game, here's Horowitz with the final call.
Dalton drops to a knee. David Moore does a cartwheel, and the benches will clear out to midfield and shake some hands. The Carolina Panthers come to Las Vegas, and Andy Dalton tried to resurrect the back end of his career. Today resurrected the Carolina offense to the tune of 437 yards. And the Panthers on the road beat down the Raiders 36-22 inside Allegiant Stadium.
Andy Dalton.
36-year-old Andy.
Yep. Andy Dalton.
Undefeated against the Raiders.
Unreal. Come on down here to Ellis Island every Friday night for Red Zone Riches. They give away $1,500 or more in free play every single week at 7 o'clock on Fridays. You can earn unlimited entries daily by playing your favorite slots at Ellis Island. One entry for every 200 points earned. If you're a fan of football and free play, this is a must attend for you. It's the Friday night Red Zone Riches. Be down here on Fridays at Ellis Island.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN, Las Vegas.
And this woman swats at the basketball and somehow decides to turn her hand down and her fingernails and jab them right into the eye of Caitlin Clark. No foul call, no refs stopping the game to go look. Is this a flagrant? Just everybody moved on. Your biggest star, your meal ticket, the reason why you have relevancy, just got stabbed and assaulted and nothing.
It's about to be a girl fight.
Jason Whitlock on the way back. That absolutely was on purpose. DeJanae Carrington should have been tossed. She's got a history of issues with Caitlin Clark. That is absurd. And for the WNBA not to care, shame on the league.
So let's say that you're right, but you're not. She should be tossed because it was a shot to the face? Yes or no? Yes or no answer?
No, it was a shot to the face with intent.
Okay.
Who blocks someone like this? And then the follow-through is this.
Okay.
Hand angle down right into the eye.
Who falls to the right but throws an elbow to the left in somebody's eye? So if that's the case, I want to hear both Jason Whitlock and your argument that Caitlin Clark should have been tossed because she was falling forward to the right and Dejanay was on the left and she threw an elbow. Yeah, okay. You Caitlin lovers find
reason. I'm not a Caitlin lover. I like the WNBA, but it is clear with certain players they've had things to say about Caitlin Clark in the past. And even
she swiped down.
You call it, and you don't even need the background. You call it in the moment. Why is she jamming her nails into the woman's eye?
I've yet to see an actual front footage where she did. I've seen all
Go to TMZ. Seriously, during the break, go to TMZ. And I'm telling you, I'm not making this up. She blocks. The hand then angles down, and she goes jammage right into the eye.
Jammage.
Yes.
The new word.
Yep.
Okay. They may put that in the CBA next year.
And now the series is over. Now you've got Caitlin
the series
Clark
was going to be over
with,
anyway.
With damaged vision and a black eye.
Oh, stop. The series, first of all, that was the worst possible matchup for the Fever in the first round anyway. Worst possible matchup was for the Fever was to get the Connecticut Sun. They got them at the beginning of the season and established their physical presence against them. They've been like that, as you mentioned. They have been labeled as the most, from jump in May 14th, they were labeled as the most physical team in the WNBA. They were labeled as the most defensive team in the WNBA. Now, as it turned out, Minnesota Lynx were just as defensive, maybe not as physical. Alyssa Thomas with the shot on Angel Reese where they say clothesline, which is it's the wrong terminology. That wasn't a clothesline on Angel Reese. And, yes, Dejanay and Caitlin have gone back and forth. But you know what? As much as I love Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Rekia Jackson, all the rookies, you know what I'm tired of, Steve? Because I think that every other team in the league should sell this in their freaking concession stands is a picture like this.
What, complaining?
That's all the that's, I mean, that if the logo is Diana Taurasi, I will agree with you.
That Caitlin Clark is amongst the top five complainers with the referees.
The mouth open in
the league. And number one is, who's number one?
Complainer for calls?
Yep. Who's number one?
You know who it is. Kelsey Plum, probably.
Could be another, I almost said.
Ace? Say it.
I almost said
it's not going to be Asia. Don't say Asia.
It is Asia.
Okay, but Asia is a big that gets hammered, just like AT in the paint. All the bigs get hammered. Jonquel Jones, Breanna Stewart, they all get knocked around. And they don't get all the calls that they should get. I'm not gonna say it's right that they complain all the time, but at the same time, Caitlin Clark, her signature pose at this point is arms out with the mouth open.
Irrelevant in this case. Did she get poked in the eye or not?
Yes.
If you need to go to TMZ to do research, then go do it. But yes, she got poked in the eye.
Okay. Did Dejanay Carrington get elbowed in the eye? Yes or no?
No.
Then you're blind. You're blind. I mean, she got poked in the eye. She got elbowed in the eye. She's going one way, and she elbows this way. So in your argument, they both should have been kicked out at some point in the game. Well, it couldn't have been, because if Dejanay would have been kicked out, then she wouldn't have got elbowed. But the bottom line is, she did elbow her.
Let's recap the weekend as Steve Kim at Twitter, SteveKim323.
Someone get me a sweat rack.
He's coming up with us live here on a Monday.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule podcast, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
All right, let's bring in Steve Kim at SteveKim323. What's up, Stevie?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Whole lot. A lot of good stories today on a Monday. I want to start with a lot of NFL with you. First of all, can we get into this conversation about this cover two high safety thing and how much people are flipping out about it?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of I think it's a little bit of pandering in the sense that it's okay to say these young quarterbacks aren't very good. They're not very well taught. And when you water down or dumb down the game, there's going to be some issues. And, you know, Coach JB has said it for years. I think he's looking more and more prescient as time goes on. I mean, I saw three games yesterday going into the late third quarter, early fourth that were 7-3. And I'm looking at games like C.J. Richardson against Caleb Williams. I'm thinking, this is unwatchable. And I heard the whole week, guys, and again, this is no indication that this team's going to be good. But I heard all of last week, poor Bryce Young. Nobody could ever succeed with what's going on there. Nobody. Not Terry Bradshaw, Johnny Unitas, Joe Montana, Dan Marino. So 36-year-old Andy Dalton gets up there, that old relic. And you know what? I'm sure you guys thought that offense suddenly looked much more functional and well-running. In fact, they scored the most amount of points of any team in the National Football League. What changed? Tell me what changed with the Panthers in 1 week.
Andy Dalton knows what he's doing. He's experienced, and right now Bryce Young ain't ready, and he might not ever be ready. I'm not giving up on him. I know you're not giving up on him. I guess the thing for me that's become sort of the new back-in-my-day deal for people our age and older, and I think Coach JB is leading the way, is that all quarterback play is weaker than it was in the past, and I can't accept that. I refuse to believe that the top-level quarterback. I heard you and Whitlock. I was watching this morning, and you guys started kind of going down the path of maybe a franchise quarterback isn't everything.
Well, that was the other guy. I still believe there are franchise quarterbacks, but not everyone is one that's labeled one. And I think what we're doing, I think the issue that Whitlock has is that you're overpaying guys who are not truly elite. And look, having a franchise quarterback does not guarantee success, but having a bad one almost guarantees you have no success. I mean, I look at the Titans with Will Levis. The longer they go on with him, the worse it's going to get. He's a turnover machine who does not play intelligently enough. And I get the sense that most of these young quarterbacks, save C.J. Stroud last year, are probably going to need a little bit of time watching and waiting, like a Jordan Love, for instance. I think when he comes back, I think he's going to continue his development and be a really, really, really good to elite quarterback. I'm high on him. But, you know, the style of play that is now employed in major college football, it's a lot of the spread, the RPO, you're not reading a lot of the field, you don't do a lot of the plays where you diagnose your own protection scheme. And a lot of these guys do not throw on time. That's another factor that nobody talks about. You can have all the arm strength in the world, but if you cannot anticipate throws and throw guys open, you're going to have a real issue at the highest levels of football.
Okay, so let's – I want to clarify something because you said not every team has a elite quarterback. So
franchise quarterback.
Franchise quarterback, excuse me. But at this point, does every franchise need a franchise quarterback? I mean, in recent times, obviously the last 2 years – we got Patrick Mahomes. I think that's a machine. But if you build the right components around it or a staunch defense, do you need a franchise quarterback?
No, I mean, if you have a good enough team, you really don't. I mean, you can make an argument that when Seattle went to back-to-back Super Bowls with a very young Russell Wilson, Russell was a very good game manager. And he played his role. But again, I think with the way the salary structure is nowadays, guys, where Dak Prescott's going to get, what, over $50, $60 million, can you actually build around him? I mean, I think there's a great advantage to these teams with a younger quarterback on their first contract. You got a situation in San Francisco where that quarterback, Brock Purdy, who I think is actually pretty good, well, once he gets to that second contract, that money's going to be spread out a little bit differently. So that's the whole thing. I mean, do you need a franchise quarterback to win a Super Bowl? Well, it's been proven that you don't. If you have a monster defense like the 2000 Ravens or something of that ilk, you really don't. You're right. But again, the 2000 Ravens defense is once in a lifetime. And so there's going to have to be an interesting discussion that happens with a lot of front offices. Do you just overpay a quarterback because that happens to be your quarterback and, in essence, bid against yourself? I mean, roster construction is such a key component. But let's also look at the other side, though. There was a period of about, 15, 20 years that if you had specifically a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, you were always going to be in the mix of at least getting to the championship game in your conference.
Steve Kim is with us. His spot every Monday on Cofield & Company is presented by Snack Nutrition. I know you're a big fan of getting back to some old-school football, some power football, and the Ravens just crushed the Cowboys with 274 on the ground. And I think your claim is, hey, this time in the NFL is ripe for a power run game because teams aren't ready for it.
Right. Well, look, I don't pretend to know more football than Bill Belichick. He has a few more rings than I do, but he made a point on his show that the teams are going to go 12 personnel, which is one back, two tight ends, or just 11 personnel with one tight end. The teams are going to go directly under center and hand the ball off old school style, downhill, ISO, toss, pitch, counter. Those teams that are defending it do not actually practice it. They don't practice nearly as much in training camp. They don't tackle as much as they used to. They don't hit as much as they used to. So once a team starts playing quote-unquote old-school football, these defenses are not really prepared for it, not only physically but technically. The run fits are bad. And let's not just go back to the Dallas game with Derrick Henry, who gashed him. Go back to the go back to the Jets with Aaron Rodgers on Thursday. Three out of their first four plays came directly under center, and I thought the Jets looked really good leaning on Breece Hall, and then eventually it set up a lot of that play action and bootleg, which Rodgers is so good at. So, again, sometimes when the whole league is going to zig, you might be best served by being able to zag.
It was also real interesting to see the Chiefs not freak out and try to throw 55 times with their running back injuries. And looky here. Carson Steele at 6 foot and 233. It's like a white Larry Johnson. Remember him? 6'1", 235, great running back. For the Chiefs, they're still going to use the run when they can.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If you really examine what's going on with Mahomes, he's kind of become a dink-and-dunk superstar game manager. I mean, I think he had almost 40 attempts yesterday and nothing close to 300 yards. So they're not pushing the ball downfield. They have really become this almost this defensive team with the ability to make big plays offensively when it matters. But look at the last two games, one possession games. 1 week a PI is a PI, and the second week a PI isn't a PI, because you can have your theories on that. But it's been a while since Patrick Mahomes has been that guy that really goes over the top consistently. You know, guys, one of the easiest ways to determine if a quarterback in a throw game is really efficient is you take a look at the amount of pass attempts and you look at the amount of pass yards. And if you're not averaging right around 8 yards, you're probably doing a lot of dinking or dunking, or you're just not that good at it.
Let's go to the college ranks. Congrats on your Canes, looking good, going on the road. Sort of a rival, at least it was a rival for USF, and quieting the crowd in Tampa. How about the exciting game between Coach Prime and Baylor? The Buffs are back, baby!
Well, they're back to where they were last year. They were 3-1 last year. And this is where it gets interesting, because I thought Baylor's one of the few games now where they were going to be favored. And I find it interesting, guys, in your city, with all those smart guys, UCF, who I like, very explosive offense, they're up to a 14-point favorite. And they're going to the bounce house. And that is going to be a wild, raucous attitude. And I said to Whitlock earlier today, you look at the emotion that was expended in that game in Boulder on Saturday night, everybody rushing the field. It's a joyous occasion. They're thanking God, which is all good. They got to prepare for a game. While UCF, keep this in mind, they are coming off of a bye week. And my theory is, because of the persona of Coach Prime and Shador, every team that has Colorado on their home schedule, that becomes the biggest game of the year for them. It's actually a testimony to the popularity that Colorado has created with Deion Sanders. I think if they can somehow win this game, they might actually have a really, really good year. But again, those guys that set those numbers out there in Vegas, they kind of know what they're looking at.
And you know what, Steve? What you just said is better phrased as a journalist than what Shador Sanders was trying to say at Media Day to me when I asked him the question that went viral, and he said, we're everybody's Super Bowl, and everybody took it to the next level, and that's all he was trying to say. Colorado has been circled by every opponent because that it's a matter of wanting to knock off Deion Sanders' team. I'll let you answer that in a second. Hang on. I also want to make this point. Don't be surprised if Colorado goes down to Tampa and looks ahead to Kansas State and young Avery Johnson, even though they just got smacked in Provo. Kansas State was supposed to be a sleeper team out of the Big 12. So they could get caught looking ahead.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But look, UCF, and I've seen a few of their games. Look, Gus Malzahn's very creative. He has a system. He plays to it. They have a big athletic quarterback in K.J. Jefferson. They have a really explosive running back in R.J. Harvey. Kobe Hudson is probably the best wide receiver they have faced yet. And, look, I was really impressed a couple weeks ago when they made this really dramatic comeback against a pretty high-powered TCU team on the road. And so I look at this and I'm like, wow, if UCF wants to announce their presence with authority in the Big 12, well, they can ambush them. They can absolutely ambush them here. And I think the Big 12 is going to prove to be a very good, balanced conference. This whole notion that somehow Colorado was going to be a few games better just because they went from a Pac-12 to a Big 12, I think that may prove to be incorrect, because you look at the Colorado schedule coming up. I think they're going to be favored against Cincinnati, and they'll probably be favored at Texas Tech, who, again, they can't stop a leaky faucet, but they score a lot. And we don't know what the health of this team is going to be in November. We don't really know about that any team. If Colorado can somehow win, let's say, 6 to 8 games, I would actually consider that a really good year, too, for Coach Sanders.
Let's stick with Colorado for a second, Steve. And your guy Cam Ward is moving up the charts for the Heisman. Can Travis Hunter on, say, a 5-7, I'll actually be enthusiastic about Colorado. If they go 5-7, can Travis Hunter win the Heisman Trophy over someone on a really, you know, high-level winning team?
You mean like an undefeated Miami team that wins the ACC? I hope not. I'm biased, but at the level, but look, it will depend on if Travis Hunter can keep up this pace. Keep this in mind. Last year, Colorado was also 3-1, and then reality hit them after they beat Arizona State, and it was downhill. I don't look at them as a particularly deep team. You are putting a lot of stress on Travis Hunter. I mean, the guy averages right around 115 snaps a game. That is amazing. I don't think we will ever see that at this level of P4 football ever again. But he's going to have to put up some numbers. He's going to have a lot of great opportunities, but I don't know. I mean, something like this is really notable for a month. Can he keep it up for 12 to 13 weeks? Well, let's see how it plays out. It's not even the end of September, and I don't think the Heisman race really begins till we get into the thick of conference play.
Steve, we appreciate the time. We did not get to the Joshua fight. We'll hit on that next week and a lot of the fight game as well. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Have a great week.
There he is, Twitter, Steve Kim, 323. Highly recommend his appearances on with Whitlock. I watched a good amount of it this morning. Steve had some really good takes. Good stuff. Giveaway time. Shriners Golf is coming to Vegas. October 17th to the 20th, TPC Summerlin. You got some of the best golfers in the world. You can get your tickets at ShrinersChildrensOpen.com. You can also get VIP tickets by registering at LVSportsNetwork.com. Tickets right now, though. Caller 7-364-1100, 364-1100.